And now for some takeouts on stories you're following this week, and we are going to start with Go-Go Todd Zwillick, the Takeaways Washington correspondent. Good morning, Todd.
Hi, good morning, Celeste.
So when is an emergency not an emergency, right? That's the question today. President Obama declared swine flu a national emergency, but we aren't having a serious influx of cases in hospitals. It isn't actually an urgent thing. This is him, he says, preparing to give hospitals the right to move forward with preparedness techniques, right?
Well, the number of cases is way up. There's no doubt about that. You know, flu cases surge every single year because we have a normal flu season. And it's very front-loaded this year because of H1N1. And H1N1 seems to have not peaked, but be on the rise much earlier than normal flu. So normally hospitals are prepared for lots of flu cases. And this year, they're not overwhelmed, but they're seeing a lot more. And there is a danger they could become overwhelmed. So this emergency declaration, in administrative terms, even though it sounds quite stark, maybe not so much.
But you know, to a certain extent, is it possible that this is just him covering his political hiney because there's so much disappointment that they didn't get all the doses out of the vaccine and people feel like the government wasn't prepared, the government isn't doing what they need to do, and then suddenly President Obama declares it a national emergency?
I tend to think that that's unlikely, and here's why. If you listen to hospital administrators, frontline ER doctors, and infectious disease people, these types of waivers that are allowed under this emergency declaration really do help them in very sort of real logistical ways. It does things like, you know, when people show up at a hospital under the law, the hospital is not allowed to transport them to another site. Or isolate them without a lot of paperwork. And meeting a lot of federal regulations. This gives relief from that. So if they need to set up an H1N1 ward in a separate area, where, by the way, isolation is very important from a public health perspective, this allows them to do it, where you can just take people and move them over. Under law, by the way, doctors can't discuss a patient's health care or their disease if other people are close enough to listen. That can violate privacy regulations.
That's the HIPAA regulations, right?
A lot of that is HIPAA. This also waives that. So if you're in an H1N1 ward and you say, Mr. Hockenberry, we think you're infected, you can actually say that behind a curtain where somebody else might hear. It's things as specific as that you need to do if your hospital does get overwhelmed. And for the docs and the nurses on the scene, this stuff can really be important.
All right, but can I ask you just a really dumb question, Todd?
I'm used to it, John.
We've been having these debates about the federal government intervening in the healthcare system, and you're saying that the federal government already restricts the behavior of doctors in all kinds of ways. I was actually shocked to hear that the federal government has a role in whether or not a patient is isolated or not.
Federal regulations do. Federal regulations govern who can be put in an ambulance and when. It's sort of an interesting question. Part of the reason why our healthcare costs are so out of control when people don't have insurance is because when somebody shows up at an emergency room for care, under federal law, they cannot be turned away, almost for any circumstances. The circumstances in which they can are very, very rare. So the hospital has to get them lined up, has to get them triaged, and they have to see them, even if it's a scratch on the fingernail.
Right.
And that's part of what drives costs up. It's because of federal laws.
I actually, Todd, this weekend was reading these blogs that were going crazy, conspiracy theory blogs, saying the reason that Obama has declared a national emergency is because now FEMA can get involved and they can run around the country forcing everyone to get vaccinated.
And then there'll be a world government.
Right.
Right. Well, the interesting FEMA angle on this is that this very disaster, not disaster, but emergency declaration under Section 1135 was declared during Katrina, eventually, when they finally got around to taking care of New Orleans in August of 2005, right?
But politically, this could be a Katrina-like event for Obama, but it could have a double edge in the sense that he declares a state of emergency, but we still don't have enough vaccine. People want it. And then on the other side, the flu may turn out to be nothing, which case it's a cry of wolf and still showed incompetence.
That's always a danger, and with public health things, it always pays to be out in front of this. It's interesting that you mentioned the vaccine because a lot of people also suspect that this emergency declaration is related to the fact that we know we don't have as much vaccine. That's actually not really true. Even as far back as August, the public health officials were making it clear that even in the best case scenario with 120 million doses of vaccine, they still expected the illness to be out in front of our ability not only to have vaccine, but to get it into arms.
Okay.
So this, in that way, is not a surprise, and I really think this is public health officials and the president at the top level just trying to cover all the bases as early as possible.
Okay, Todd Zwillick is the Takeaways Washington correspondent. The answer there is an emergency is not an emergency when it's involved. involve swine flu.
Well, we certainly heard a lot of voices last week on the program who were concerned about the unavailability of H1N1 vaccine. We talked with Allison Prang of Madison, Wisconsin. Her four-year-old daughter has asthma, and she hasn't been able to get the vaccine.
I'm very concerned. I'm just a concerned mom that wants to protect my daughter, and we know that this option is out there.
And, of course, this motivated all kinds of stories from you at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
This is Kevin Kennedy in Norman, Oklahoma. I heard this story with the woman in Wisconsin. I don't know if this will make her feel any better, but my son, who has asthma and is 5 years old, contracted the disease last week. We got him into the doctor. The day he presented symptoms, they gave him Tamiflu. It was H1N1. And 5 days later, he was fine. So it would seem that if you can get them in quickly, that the available medication is effective. So all is not lost if you can't get the H1N1 vaccine.
And speaking of reaching out, we heard this from a listener last week.
One of the issues with the new H1N1 viral vaccine is that the multi-dose units contain the preservative dimerosal, which is a mercury preservative. Now, the issue with that is, of course, autism.
Now, just to be clear, that has been debunked. Vaccines have not shown any connection to causing autism. There's no evidence, zero, to back that up.
But it's interesting. This whole vaccination issue does motivate people on these conspiracy sites that you were talking
does.
About earlier.
Here's what somebody else says.
My name is Stephanie. I was going to give my kids the swine flu vaccine, and then I saw that Thermosol was a part of the multiple shots, and I'm scared about Thermosol. Even though they say there's no connection with autism and studies don't show that, I'm still not convinced.
Oh, I don't know what it takes to convince you, but other listeners are weighing in on this as well, with, it sounds like, a response to that particular one.
To die, I live in New Jersey, I'm 66 years old, and I was able to get the H1N1 vaccine by participating in a clinical study. I got it earlier this week. Too bad there is no vaccine against believing stupid propaganda.
I guess that would be leading against ignorance there.
Well, no insults. Keep the responses coming, though. And we want to talk today about living on credit and whether you can do without it. Do you want to live without credit? And what would you do without a credit card?
Hi, this is Mike from Wayne on credit card usage. I've kicked the habit long ago by simply converting to a debit card. I've foregone any points or any rewards with the credit cards because it's a trap. I'd rather just know my checking balance at any moment, and a debit card allows me to do that, and it just comes right out of my checking account as I pay.
Stories and advice at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Keep it coming.